Hello and welcome to Dizzy World. Dizziness and vertigo are among the most common complaints in patients of all ages to their doctors, and yet there are still a limited number of specialists equipped to evaluate and treat these conditions. As a global leader in the science and business of equilibrium medicine, our goal is to empower healthcare providers from all specialties to help this important population of patients. On Dizzy World, we'll highlight outstanding clinicians, scientists, and business owners bringing excellent care to dizzy patients globally and living the AIB motto, dizziness and vertigo. You don't have to learn to live with it. Hello, Dizzy World, and thank you all for joining us on now what is episode 4 of the Dizzy World podcast, where we highlight outstanding business owners, clinicians, entrepreneurs, scientists, and all folks that are involved with helping the very, very important population of individuals that we know are suffering from dizziness, imbalance, and vertigo. We have a very, very, very special guest today, a dear friend of mine and a colleague, a good friend of AIB's for now almost a decade, Dr. Ali Vega, doctor of audiology and owner of Complete Hearing and Balance in the Northwest region of Washington. So, Ali, thank you so much for being with us today and taking time out of what I know is a very busy schedule that you guys have up there. Ali's going to be joining us specifically to speak a little bit about her experience, her endeavors, and her journey in adding dizziness and balance services to her practice. So, Ali, anything that I've left off or anything that you want our viewers to know about you, do, if you don't mind, a quick intro of who you are and just a little bit of your background, you know, the kind of classic age old, where you came from, where you are, and where you're going, if you don't mind. Sure.
Thanks, Joe. I really appreciate you having me on the show. It's such an honor to be included on this very famous podcast. So I got my degree in audiology from Western Washington University. I'm originally from North Idaho, Eastern Washington area. And I thought I was going to be a high school counselor and ended up in the audiology world. And it's been a perfect fit for me. So, you know, do you want me to start like through that whole thing of just how...
Well, before we get into any of the audiology stuff, I do need our viewers to know that a fun fact about Ali, the most important thing is that you're actually, your DNA has been tested and you've been identified as part mermaid. Is that right?
I am part mermaid. I am.
So actually, Ali, go ahead.
I had a psychic tell me a couple of years ago that I was a mermaid in a past life. And I was like, I knew it.
Yeah. So Ali, obviously up in the Northeast, is a big boat enthusiast, part mermaid. But yeah, if you just, so when you got into audiology, obviously, I mean, a pretty common theme that we have on the show here is that people get into this with under the concept of audiology is hearing and hearing aids and these different kind of things. Kind of, I think a good way to start these conversations typically is to understand the full scope of your practice now. It always helps to build a little bit of a foundation. So when you got into audiology, you probably thought you were going to be a high school counselor, but did you, you know, have this concept of, oh, I like hearing aids, I could do that? Or how did that conversation start?
No, I was a party girl.
Okay.
I was somebody, my parents are professors at the University of Idaho. They were professors at the University of Idaho. And I was like, I do not want a doctorate degree. So like, whatever I do not want a doctorate degree. I don't want to work that hard. Like I want to have that work-life balance. I want to have a lot of fun. And, I wanted to be a mom and, you know, I just kind of wanted to have a nice kind of cushy life. And I was like, oh, high school counselor, that seems like a good, you know, get to help people. But like, you don't have to work that hard and you get your summers off and like all that kind of seemed great. But I knew I wanted to help. That's what I knew. I wanted to help people who had problems and help them sort it out and figure it out so we all could have this like awesome life. And when I left Idaho, I went to school at Western Washington and I started studying psychology. And then I realized that there were a lot of people getting degrees in psychology. There was like 400 people in my lectures.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, how are we all going to get jobs? Like, I'm going to have to figure out how to get a job with all these other people. And so I thought, maybe I should specialize in something. But again, I don't want to work too hard. I wouldn't want to work too hard. That would be awful. So my family, not my parents, but the rest of my family, all my aunts and uncles and my grandparents owned nursing homes. And so I was working front desks evenings and weekends for them at their nursing home. And I was talking to my uncle one night and he said, we were talking about careers. And he said, you know, you should look at audiology. There's an audiologist who's a contractor. She comes into the facility. She creates her own schedule. She makes really good money. She gets to help people. And I was like, oh, that seems pretty good. But so I started looking into it. And then that was like 1996, I guess. Okay. Newsweek had an article that said, you know, top profession of the decade, audiology.
That's degree ever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, let's do this. And so I took a class in intro to communication disorders. That's when I fell in love with hearing.
Okay.
It was the science of it. I remember learning about the anatomy of nerve innervation and ossicles and cochlea and vestibular function, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, my mind was blown.
Yeah.
And I thought I could learn about this much of the body and help somebody who's got some real problems feel like a rock star.
Yeah. I got to tell you, that is the most pragmatic, flat-footed, objective, incredible answer I've heard in speaking almost any audiologist. And we've actually, even full disclosure, we've been friends for a long time now, and I don't know that I've ever heard that angle. I'm the same way. How can I, you know, it's so, oh, well, I guess I need to stand out from all these other people getting degrees. There seems to be less people going into audiology. It's not that hard, but it's so fascinating because you've heard probably, I'm sure, every student in the classic, oh, I just love communication. And I, you know, it's interesting to hear and I think we'll dig into this a little bit more as we get into some of the more business development concepts and things. But one of the cool things I've always appreciated about you, and I've told you this, is your ability to wear, yes, I'm an excellent clinician. I want to help people. I want to get people their lives back. I want to be a part of their journey to wellness. But you're also able to do that important, you know, all important switch where you flip into business mode and understand, you know, what has to happen to bring revenue through the door and to drive your business in the direction that it wants to go and those kind of things. So I guess it makes perfect sense that that was that was sort of the journey that you kind of went into. So, all right. So you go and you get this communication, you know, you go down this communication pathway and you start to appreciate the science and things. Flash forward. We don't need to hear about all the partying that you did in college or any of that stuff. Flash forward to your opening up or taking over or acquiring the business, which at the time was Ascent, right? Didn't your business has gone through a couple of different transitions? Tell us about your first dabbling into private practice and ownership and management and those kind of things.
I did my fourth year rotation at an ENT practice and they ended up hiring me after.
Okay.
And as much as I appreciated that experience, I mean, I learned so much about surgeons, the surgical process, how surgeons are thinking, like what, when a patient comes into an ENT office, what do they want to know from an audiologist? Like, what can I do to be a part of that whole care model?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I really appreciated that, but it just wasn't filling my bucket as a clinician. So I was there like 7 years. I was approached by a hearing aid manufacturer who said, hey, we think you'd be a great private practice owner. Never in my life did I think I would own a private practice. It was never on my radar. And they were like, no, we pick you. We think you're going to be great. So they helped coach me, set me up private practice. I couldn't believe I was doing that, but it was a hearing aid practice. So, and I'd been selling hearing aids in the ENT office. So that all, you know, made sense. And that was how I was operating as an audiologist at that point. But really my dreams and what my heart wanted to do was I wanted to do cochlear implants and Baha and vestibular. And I wanted to be able, when a patient came into my office, to be able to have all sorts of tools in my toolbox to help them, no matter what their issue was.
Yeah.
So I started doing private practice in 2011. I opened my private practice. By 2015, I was introducing vestibular and cochlear implants. And that's when I met you guys.
Right.
At an ABA conference.
And, but when you started your, in 2011, you were exclusively dispensing and yep. hearing diagnostics. Yep. Got it. Okay. Yep.
And all my currency was, you know, how many hearing aids does it take to pay for that piece of equipment? How many hearing aids does it take to, for that marketing program? You know, it was all based upon hearing aid sales.
But always, always nervous. Yeah. The goal was always to be more of a one-stop shop.
Always. You know, I always wanted to be diversified.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be a hearing aid salesperson. Yes, that's one of the tools I have, but I didn't want to just be selling hearing aids because I was trained to do more. I want to do more, and patients need more than just hearing
yeah.
aids.
Yeah, for sure. So flash forward to, we'll get back into when we first met and these kind of things in a few minutes, but flash forward to now, you know, you're ripping and tearing. I mean, you've got this wildly successful vestibular business. You've got you do a ton of implants. You're dispensing. You know, now that you're 12 years removed from that, what's been, I mean, what are things like now? What are you doing? What's your day to day? Your staff is growing. Give us a little bit of now the present Ali Vega and complete.
So now I have 3 locations. So I started with 1 location, and then last year I opened 2, and I had some satellite offices that I dabbled in for a while and then closed. And that was all pre-COVID stuff. It wasn't even because of COVID. It was just, I tried it. It didn't work. Wrong location, wrong providers, that kind of thing. So right. I now have 3 locations. I have 4 audiologists, and we have 12 support staff, and we all rotate through all the clinics. And we have a rotary chair in 2 different offices, and we do implants in all 3 offices. So really what we've built now is a totally diversified clinic, what I wanted the whole time. And what it does is it allows us to not only treat each patient individually and not look at just hearing aid sales, but it also allows me to bring services to these rural communities that would otherwise have to travel to Seattle. And that was always my dream too, was to bring really high quality healthcare, audiology healthcare, to these rural communities. I would have patients who live far out, and I'd say, you need a cochlear implant. You need to go up to Seattle. And they'd say, no, too far. Like, they literally would just yeah. not get service because yeah. it was too far to go.
Yeah.
Or they're like, no, I want you to be my audiologist. I want to stay with you. So once you build that trust, you know, people want to stay.
Right. And your splits, Ali. So 2011, obviously, if you looked at your financials, your hearing aids, I'd imagine somewhere, and then the diagnostics, you know, a little chunk. Has that really, have you seen a lot of that balancing out? Are you finding that your rain buckets or your oil wells are a little bit more diversified? I mean, it's in concept, right? Everybody says diversify, diversify, you have to diversify. But have you found, I mean, are you fiscally realizing that when you're getting, you know, keeping your lights on is now more dependent on diagnostics and a wide portfolio of services versus just the hearing aid income? Are you actually
seeing that? Absolutely. We don't have to rely on hearing aid sales because we have a very strong diagnostic business, and we don't have to rely on selling hearing aids to keep the doors open. It's gravy. It's nice when we sell yeah. hearing aids, and we sell a lot of hearing aids, but we don't actually have to sell them. It's a treatment plan. It's one of our treatment plans that we offer. And yeah. so it's an easy thing to just incorporate into a treatment plan for a patient.
Yeah. So on that note of this idea of treatment plan versus buy my device, let's talk a little bit about this concept of vestibular. I mean, obviously we're a little bit biased at the Institute in terms of its importance, but one of the things I really like to take on the podcast here is, what was your perspective on this like at the beginning? Was it, I'll buy this equipment and add this balance service. I took a couple classes, or I can go online and figure out how to do. What did the first steps or the decision process look like? And like, I've always wanted to add vestibular. I'm going to do it. What's next? Where did you go?
Yeah, I wanted to add vestibular because it met that goal of being diversified. And also, I was looking around. Nobody else was doing it. Nobody else in my area was doing it. The ENTs wanted nothing to do with it. If anybody came in, they were dizzy. They were like, oh, nope, we don't do that. They didn't even want an audiologist to do it in their practice. They just wanted nothing to do with it. So I thought, I got to bring this to the community. It would be good for patients, good for the community, good for my business. It's what we're trained in. And then I thought, oh, I had a class or two in graduate school. And, you know, I've done some ENGs in my life. How hard could this be? Right. So I called up one of my manufacturers and I bought some equipment and got trained on the equipment. And I was like, okay, here we go. Ready to roll. And then I didn't really know how to get patients to do it. I was asking some ENTs to send me people, but they were sending me a couple people a month, maybe, which is really hard to hone your skills when you're doing it like 4 to 8 hours a month. So it kind of fizzled because I had this equipment. I didn't really know how to use it. I didn't really have patience. I wasn't really sure what to do with the follow-up or the results. And I honestly, Joe, I didn't love it. I knew that patients needed it, but there are some people like you and there's lots of audiologists who like that is their passion. Yeah. And I give you so much credit. It is not my passion, but I know that it's important.
Yeah.
So I want to provide it. So then I thought, okay, well, I'll hire somebody. I'll hire an audiologist. And I told them, okay, specifically, you're going to be running these VNGs and this is going to be your thing. Okay. Yep. That's great. And it kind of fizzled. They would do, I mean, they weren't business owners. They were audiologists. Yeah. So they were just doing the one or two a month that would come from the ENT. They didn't know how to market it. They didn't know how to make it better, grow it. And then I repeated that a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it was great because patients wanted it. ENTs wanted me to do it, but then I felt really bad because I wasn't doing much for the patient. The patient wasn't getting really good information about what was going on and I had no way for them to have follow-up. And it felt kind of bad.
It's kind of that classic. I remember thinking when I took my first VNG class, it's kind of like that classic, strip away the science for a second, because I know it with vestibular, it's such a ethereal and kind of difficult to understand science, but strip that away for a second. Like patients want answers. They don't want a test, right? So to do those people out there that are, oh, I do VNG. Well, to do a VNG and write a report that says, oh, this patient has normal ear function. It's like, well, if I'm the patient, I want to know what the heck's going on. I don't want to know that I have a normal test finding. So I think that's a huge commonality in the mistake that a lot of people make early on is, oh, I'm going to offer a VNG and that'll tell the doctor if the ear is normal or abnormal. And we think that there's some magic equation that the doctor has. Okay, the ear's normal. That means this must be going on. But the reality of it is the patient goes back to the doctor. The ear's normal. And the patient continues on this really wicked journey of like, well, what in the heck could be going on? I've seen every specialist. Nobody's told me. What I think is cool about you, and we've had this conversation before, is understanding not only from a pain and suffering for the patient, what doing services at that level does. So obviously you're not able to help patients at the caliber that you'd like to, but also how that's going to affect dollars and cents at your clinic. Because if patients aren't happy, and if they're not reporting back to the physician who referred them over that, oh, they did a great job and we figured out what was going on and I'm on my path to wellness and it's been helpful, why would I, as your physician customer, continue to send to you if the reports and if the information is not of utility for me? So I think even though a lot of times it gets super complex and ethereal and people get like vestibular, ooh, that's a lot of nerves and innervation. And if you think about it just from a consumer standpoint, you need to have a service that provides value. You have to have a great product and you have to be able to sell that product. Right. And market that product. So now that you kind of have this journey of, okay, I need to do a better job taking care of the patients. How did you find you were obviously, even at the time I met you, very sophisticated in your marketing campaigns and things in the hearing space. But how did you find sort of the other business development silos, specifically patient acquisition? What was that journey like going from, you know, oh, a couple of ENTs send, maybe we're at two a week, to now where you're at, where it might not be an uncommon week for you to see 10, 15 patients between your clinics?
Well, you know, to AIB's credit, that was a lot of coaching from you guys. Cause I literally, when I met you guys, I didn't know. I thought, you know, it's not like you can put a newspaper ad out about, hey, although I think that could probably work because so many people are dizzy, but I literally didn't know how to get dizzy patients. And so with your guys' coaching, what we do now, I mean, the physician stuff is great, but it's It's sending a detailed report. It's helping those physicians know, okay, it's not the ear, but here's what it might be. And here's the next step. And here's what you should maybe think about. This should be on your radar, giving them something to do rather than just checking that box and being like, it's not my problem. Because that primary care physician literally says, help me help this person. Cause I'm out of my league here. And at least you know a little bit about it. Yeah. So I think that they really appreciate a good thorough report. And so then when they do, they are sending more patients back over. And so we're getting a ton of physician referrals for that from primary cares, neurologists, ENTs, psychologists, dentists. We're getting all sorts of referrals. And I didn't really go out and do like an active physician marketing campaign. I just word has gotten out between physicians of where do I send my DESI patient? But then also just my own database. I did a couple of database emails actually through my OMS system and just let patients know that we're offering these services. So that really worked. And then also when we were seeing patients for their diagnostic hearing test, you know, we were already asking about dizziness. It was all already part of our case history. And then telling patients if they were like, oh yeah, I've been dizzy for years, nobody can figure it out. Or, oh my gosh, for like the last year, every time I turn my head to the left, I get super dizzy and nobody knows what's going on. Then we're going, we have some testing that I'm recommending for you to do next time. So at the end of your hearing test today, we're going to walk out to the front and get you scheduled for a vestibular evaluation. And we just start building those in. And it was super easy.
And I've got to give your team huge props, because one of the things that you just mentioned that's super, super important is we work with a lot of audiologists that there's the data, right? The data shows that a large percentage of patients that you're treating for hearing loss also have some degree of imbalance, dizziness, or some of these other kind of problems. What can be challenging for the private practice owner or the private practice situation is how do you convert that conversation of, oh, I see you have been dizzy recently. You know, we need to get you scheduled for this evaluation versus the mistake I think that a lot of practice owners or employees make is, oh, well, we have this dizzy service, this diagnostic service. If you want to sign up for it, you can. We might be able to help you. So that piece where you and your practice manager, Jory, is a rock star, and you guys and your team really have a sophisticated model of, okay, you have been dizzy. This is not an option. This is part of the portfolio of services that we have. You're going to be scheduled for this testing because it's the gold standard. Because that's what
we have to lead our patients to their care. We have to lead them there. They're coming to us literally saying, I'm having this problem and I don't know what to do about it. And they want us to tell them what to do about it.
Yeah. And too often,
say no, but you should say, based on what you've told me and I'm the expert, here's what you need.
Yeah.
And don't give me the option.
Because not everyone in audiology behaves like that. A lot of practices that maybe have made their living in the hearing aid space, you know, they get a little bit passive. Yeah. Have you ever thought about having a vestibular exam? And here's the patient, a vestibular exam. What is, right? They don't take the ownership of that and really take and own that flag. And that's one of the reasons that so many dizzy patients go without care for so long. So you've hit your database. The physician relationships is another big one that you and I have talked a lot about. This is obviously a huge topic. We don't have time to dive that far. But if you had one piece of advice, AIB or non-AIB related, vestibular related, non-vestibular related, for an audiology practice that's struggling building relationships with doctors, with physicians, what guidance, where might you tell someone to start, or what might you recommend that they do? Do they call them? Do they message them on social media? I know you're neighbors with one of them, so you talk to them in the cul-de-sac. Can you speak to that just from your experience in building an awesome network of physician referrals?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really comes down to the relationship that you build with your physicians. And everybody's got different circumstances and there's lots of different personalities to deal with. But I'll tell you, I took my whole staff, all 16 of us, I took us to one of our ENTs that is pretty close to us and sends us a lot of referrals.
Yeah.
And I bought him lunch. It was Taco Tuesday. So I took in a whole bunch of tacos. But rather than dropping off the food and bailing as like a thank you, which I think a lot of people do that, or cookies or, you know, whatever, we stayed. My entire 16 staff stayed. invited his whole staff in to get to know each other, because whether it's the front desk person, the referral coordinator, the nurse, you know, whatever, we're all interacting together, and it takes all of us to help that patient. So I wanted to create that relationship, but I asked one of the ENTs when it was sort of like that awkward conversation, you know, they're my friends, but the rest of my staff is like, oh my gosh, these ENTs, like, they're so powerful. I'm like, I said, hey, Dr. Mulder, what are we doing well? Can you tell my staff what are we doing well and what do we need to work on? And he said, well, I can tell you what you do well is you send me a good report that I understand and it makes sense. I can trust it. He said that like off the bat. So that solidified for me that what I said back when I learned at the ENT office early on in my career was figure out what questions do they want answered. Answer them clearly. Don't try to fluff up your reports. Don't try to make them all fancy. Get down to the basics. Tell them what they want to know. Answer the questions they want. Give them the information that you know in a really clear, concise way, and send a report every time. Every time. Because that brand awareness, their staff will see your logo. The staff, if the doctor's in surgery and they're like, oh my gosh, somebody with a sudden hearing loss just called in, what do we do? Well, that complete hearing imbalance, we know that we send them a lot of hearing tests. Let's call them. The staff can then start to build that relationship with your clinic, even when the surgeon's not telling them where to refer. Create that relationship, make it equal. Make it something that's between both parties, same level. Don't be like cowering, like, oh, Mr. ENT, thank you so much for your referrals. It's really sweet of you. No, I'm a doctor. You're a doctor. I have a specialty. You have a specialty. Here's what I know. Here's how I can help you help your patients. Yeah. And what else can I do? What am I missing? I think when you can create that kind of a relationship with a physician of any specialty, that's when you're going to start to get those referrals, because they're going to see you as an equal. They're going to see you as somebody who has something, some value to their practice, who's going to help them make their job a lot easier.
And that's business 101. People do business with people they like. All of us are working professionals that want our lives made easier. We provide a service that makes their life, it's customer service 101. But the other thing that I've not heard on, you know, at least on the podcast here yet, is this concept that you've clearly found of you have to be comfortable asking questions, even if you don't know that you're going to love the answer. Because I think a reason that a lot of people like to fluff up and not ask doctors straight up, what am I doing well and what would you like to see done better? There's always the chance that physician's going to tell you, well, patients are coming back and they really don't like the way your office smells. So I'd like that. You know, you may hear something that you're not going to be overly positive or excited about, but in customer service, which let's just face it, that's what we're doing for these customer, the physician customers. They're not our superior, but they're our customer. What we've got to be comfortable doing is asking them, what do you like about this product or service? What do you not like? And be able to create an open chain of communication. Because what's the alternative? They don't like what we're doing. And instead of telling us, they don't send us patients, which hurts the business. So,
And then be willing to fix whatever they bring to your attention. Be willing. Don't be so proud of yourself to say like, well, I think our office smells great. I don't know what he's talking about. Be like, okay, where did we think the smell is coming from? And why does it smell bad? And what can we do about it? You know, try to fix that and then invite them over after you fix the smell problem and let them see for themselves that the smell is gone.
That was an analogy, folks, by the way. Allie's office does not.
I think my office smells really nice.
So the other thing that I really like that I get a little bit of pushback from some of the owners that we work with when we speak about this, the fact that you are willing to invest a half a day or a lunch or whatever to close down your offices, you've got to be so dialed into your long-term goals. And I think a lot of times offices are short-sighted and, oh, I don't want to spend my audiologist is generating revenue selling hearing aids. So I really don't want to send them out to physicians' offices, even for a half a day here and there to, you know, talk services and drop off materials and these kind of things. Do you have any thoughts on your willingness to invest things on the front end, specifically your staff's time, your time, energy, resources, with the goal being more of a long-term return, like a strong relationship with a doctor? Is that something that you take into account when you're making business decisions?
It is something I take into account, and I am enough of a control freak that I prefer to do it myself, because I know how important that time is and the opportunity that is presented. And so I have taken staff with me that I'm trying to train to do it as well. But I think it's really important for the owner to do it. I do. And I know that doesn't really make a lot of financial sense, but people want to talk to the owner. They don't want to just talk to somebody who is an employee. They're like, I don't know. She just told me to bring these brochures. We hope you refer to us. They want to have like, that might be the time where they're like, oh my gosh, I saw a patient last week. I'd love to talk to you about this. And that's their opportunity to get some information, to find out what I know and what I think. And that's when they're going to make that decision about whether or not to work together. So I do a lot of that stuff myself. But I do take staff members with me because I do want to train other people to be able to do it. I just know the power of being the owner and people being really impressed with the opportunity to talk to me.
Yeah. You're the face. Yeah. And you're also going to have an ownership and an authority over your business and your messaging that no one else can. But the reality of it is, if it's building a relationship with a referral source that could generate $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a month for you for the foreseeable future, those meetings early on are going to pay huge, huge dividends on the back end. Absolutely.
Yep, absolutely.
So one of the concepts that you and I have spoken about at length is this idea of writing the reports. So the diagnostic testing is done, the information is gathered. How do you go about, your reporting to physicians? What does that process look like? And what might you recommend to an audiology practice that's, well, the tests take a long time and the reports take a long time. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. And that was part of the obstacles that we had at the beginning, was recreating the wheel every time. Recreating the wheel. And, if I was delegating this stuff to another audiologist, they were writing the report. And again, sometimes it wasn't the way I wanted it. So we did a couple of really smart things, I think, that did help to advance the practice and the service model. The first thing I did was I got a practice management system. We use Counselor, shout out for Counselor, but we use Counselor, which has the ability to write templates. And not every practice management system allows that ability to write templates. So we took the time, sat down, wrote out a template for what a vestibular report or diagnostic hearing report would look like. And then you could actually put in little placeholders where you just quickly fill in the information for each patient. You're not having to rewrite a report every time. Right. Saves a ton of time. And then you can be really deliberate and really good about like, I want to say this thing this way. And we have like normal results, abnormal results, or even, very specific things so that it really cuts down the amount of time. So test time, collecting the data is going to take a certain amount of time, but then there's like, oh my gosh, I got to write a report.
Yep.
We've really streamlined that so that it takes a matter of minutes. Honestly, it's a matter of minutes.
Awesome.
But in addition to having those done, your overread program has been a game changer for our vestibular services because we can send your team all the objective data, have your experts look it over, and then I get that back and then I can interpret that. So I'm basically getting,
it's almost
a condensed version from your experts saying, we look at a million of these every day. Here's what we think. And then I look at that and I put that with my case history. And then I call my patient and I say, look, here's what we've got. Here's what's going on. Here's what we think it is. And I know with all confidence, a team of experts said, this is what's going on. So I'm not having to second guess myself. And that helps me streamline my processes a lot
as
well.
Level of confidence with the patients and the product. And that's incredible.
And it's, and it's similar, and I've talked about this. It's similar to, a radiologist sending out the radiology report.
Yep.
Right. Like it has saved me an immense amount of time and it makes me more confident in the results. And that's been a game changer for us.
Yeah. Absolutely. And ultimately, as you put beautifully and eloquently, it's almost like an education tool that allows you to have a pre-screened report that you can take with all the confidence in the world to that patient and say, listen, not only have I looked all of this over, but a team of experts of 20 experts from all around the country have looked at this. And with algorithms and data, we're highly confident that this is where your problem's coming from. And this is what we're going to recommend in terms of the next step. And we're going to collaborate with your physician on all this. So that's awesome. So kind of in summary, or to finish up, if you had an elevator pitch to a patient, I'm sure you do this all the time. Why Complete? Like, what is it that you guys do differently? What has been your calling card? And, you know, why would I send my mother to see you, whether she needs an implant, she needs vestibular service, she has hearing loss? You know, what do you guys do? What have you found that's been that key to your success over the years?
Well, because we are looking at the whole body, the whole patient. We are not just looking to sell hearing aids. We're not just looking to do surgeries. We're looking at the whole patient. And we really value that we collaborate with other medical professionals. We collaborate with each other. But we really want to help each patient with whatever symptoms they bring to us. We've got all the tools in the toolbox to be able to figure out how to help them. And you know, my business name, I just rebranded last year. My business name was Ascent Audiology and Hearing because I was a hearing aid store. And when I rebranded, it was like this whole talk about what makes us different? Who are we? What do we represent? And we ended up with Complete Hearing and Balance because we are complete. We're complete audiology. We're complete patient. We're complete everything. When you come into the office, we're going to look at every single thing that we know about. And we also are making connections when people come in and they've got tinnitus. And we're talking about like TMJ, and we're talking about stress, and we're talking about hydration and sleep disorders. And we're talking about all these types of things that we're not specialists in, but we're educated enough to know that everything's connected within the body. And we care about whether or not that patient's getting the answers that they need. So maybe they come in and we're like, oh, you don't have any hearing loss at all, but you've mentioned all these other things that are sort of manifesting as maybe a hearing problem. Gosh, have you thought about auditory processing disorder testing? You know, how's your stress level? You know, so we really care about our patients. And I know that's sort of a cliche answer about, you know, caring about our patients, but we do. And we want to be able to give them answers to educate them enough to know, okay, again, like with vestibular, maybe check the box. It's not your ear, but what is it? There's something going on. And we want to help you find that out. We want to help support you and give you whatever information we can to help lead you down your healthcare path so you can feel better and feel like yourself again.
Yeah. And it's step away from the ear, right? The days of audiology and, oh, your audiogram's normal. I guess good luck. Come back if you notice a change. That decade or that age of audiology is dead. If you practice like that, you're not going to survive. You're going down with the ship. And I think in a commonality that I've seen across really successful, bright young owners like you that I've had the fortune of speaking with and being guests on is there's that same consistent pattern of, you know what, I'm going to open the aperture of how I can help the person sitting in front of me. It's somebody's grandmother. It's somebody's mother. So if I don't have an answer, I can at least educate you on where a next best step, who another specialist or who on my interdisciplinary care team might be able to help you. So I think the concept of equilibrium, balance function, hearing issues, cognitive decline, you know, all the brain stuff that we're really fortunate because the world's our oyster as audiologists. Everything's opening up to us, but it's about embracing that kind of like you have and being able to take on these specialties and really learn them, take ownership and be able to, at the end of the day, make good medicine, good business. Be able to help take care of patients and also do it in a profitable manner.
Yep.
So I cannot thank you enough. Is there anything for our listeners, anything that you want to finish with? Any advice for young audiologists that, you know, are navigating this rocky, you know, we do a lot of stuff with students and young professionals. Oh my God, OTC and big box and Costco. Why am I going into this profession? I'm scared. You know, any words of wisdom just over, you know, over your career that you've learned or things that you want to kind of leave our audience with before I close up here?
Sure. I think what comes to mind first when you ask that question is just our future is very bright. For a young audiologist, don't let anybody tell you that, oh my gosh, you know, audiology is going to be absolute. It's going to be the big box is going to take over and OTC is going to take over. Diversify your practice. Figure out what makes your heart sing as well. There's a lot of things that we can do as audiologists and figure out what you love doing, what gets you out of bed every day, what you're passionate about, focus on that. And if it's several things, figure out how to diversify it. And you can do all of it. It's we have so much opportunity. It's awesome. It's way better than when I started my practice 12 years ago. I feel like there's so much more opportunity. There's more support. There's more communication with amongst us as professionals. And I would say diversification is the best thing you can do if you're going to be in private practice.
Love it. And, you know, one of the things that I would say to anyone listening, that the takeaway from Ali Vega is not only a professional, but also a human. Notice her positive, upbeat, uplifting energy. Everything is an opportunity to grow. Everything is an op. There's a certain degree of, I guess the word for it is gratitude, that I see in you every time that we interact. And there's not enough of that in audiology right now. A lot of people that are, you know, there's a lot of negative energy and different, but there are really, really awesome bright spots. And that's what I'd say the overarching, you know, concept from today would be, is listen to all of this positivity, all these different avenues, all this great stuff going on. Ali, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time today. I really appreciate everything. Anyone that's listening, be like Ali, successful, go-getter mentality, bright, upbeat. Can't speak highly enough. Thanks so much, Ali. And everyone tuning in, thank you for being with us today. And we'll see you on the next episode of Dizzy World. And remember, just like Ali's doing, dizziness and vertigo, you don't have to learn to live with it. So thanks, everyone. And we'll see you next time.